Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
What's the role of gamification in business? And how can we effectively use that in marketing? So that's what we are going to be discussing today. And this is Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is Manish Nepal.
All right, so today we have someone who lives by product growth and gamification. Sumit Kumar Singh, he's done it all. He's an IIM grad, leadership program, and he's done a leadership program with Harvard. He's championed products across industries, specific industries, and in media, travel industry, and much more. So Sumit, welcome to the show. We're really honored to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure myself.
Right, Sumit, can you just take us through the journey of how you actually got into gamification?
Gamification for me started when I was leading the charter for timespoints.com. And we were basically, you know, taking a rehash at the whole product with positioning internally, externally, trying to understand why it never worked, even though the product was kind of launched 5 years back. And that's how we kind of started and digging deep inside. And then we kind of figured out that loyalty at the core of it, you know, loyalty, more often than not, people kind of understand loyalty programs as something which is a part of either a marketing program or a sales program, and it's a cost center, and you eventually have to spend a lot of money to eventually, you know, get some traction or some stickiness or loyalty from the customers, so on and so forth. You know how typically people think of loyalty and programs like these. So that kind of got started, and I kind of came across this whole topic of gamification while I was reading about how do you build stickiness in the apps. And that one string search kind of, you know, led me to Instagram, Facebook, and the gamification that these guys have done. That kind of led me to a couple of other clickouts. Eventually, I landed up on Neil Iles and Yukai Chow's blog, and I started reading them. And I still remember, for that particular week, I was completely zapped. I was like obsessed with this concept of gamification. I was only reading gamification blogs and so many other things on what these guys have talked about and done respectively. And these two guys are like gods for me, like absolutely. Neeril and Yukai Chow are like absolutely amazing guys. So that's kind of, you know, got me started. And then when I rehashed the entire product that was, you know, that existed and what we built eventually, that got us some of those massive successes, so much so that I think last year, 2019, Timespoint was rewarded the best loyalty program in India. And we are also the largest loyalty program, by the way. So that got me excited and started into gamification. And that journey has not ended yet.
That's wonderful to hear. I mean, what part of gamification does really excite you? Is it about retaining your customers and keeping them engaged? Or is it about getting new customers?
You know, I like the way you frame the question there. And that's something which a lot of people get wrong about gamification. So when we talk about gamification per se, like the whole concept of gamification, it's not just about retaining customers. It's not just about selling something. It's not just about positioning something. Gamification is a theory. It's a concept. It's a philosophy by which you do business. It's a philosophy by which you live day in and day out and you engage with customers. That's the experience that you deliver to the customer. And that is something which encompasses in totality of what gamification is. So if you talk to me what gamification is, it starts from the time when you come to know about this new pizza corner in the city, or you come to know about this new place or this new, you know, an offbeat location that your friends may have gone to, and there is this new offer from one of these airlines that may have just introduced a new charter plane to that. Or it can start off with a new mobile app that your friends may have referred you to. It can be anything. You know, gamification starts from the time when somebody talks about it, when somebody shares some bit about it, or you come to know about it right through the time when you become a customer and then start talking about it yourself. Each one of those aspects as Neeral kind of, you know, puts across, you have the four phases to building a habit in a product. And that could be like trigger, action, rewards, and investment. Once you've done it, your internal triggers start to kick in. And that's what gamification is all about.
That's amazing, Sumit. Just to be clear on the books that you just referred to, you're talking about Nir Eyal's first book, and it's the other person that you talked about is Mihail. I can never pronounce his second name. Yeah, isn't he the same person who wrote the book on Flow?
I'm not sure about that one.
Okay.
I've only been following his work on what Octalysis is all about, and then Actionable Gamification, and a couple of his blogs. I love reading his blogs more than the books per se.
Hooked, right. Okay, so you talked about gamification being not just about customer acquisition and retention in the form of loyalty programs. But can you talk a little more about the wide-ranging benefits of gamification and how does it fit nicely with the growth strategy of a B2B company, for example?
Ah, interesting. The way you introduce gamification, perhaps that engine will change, but if I have to literally implement Octalysis and the OE8 core drive that Yukai speaks about, B2B versus B2C would not be very different, if you ask me. I'm not sure if you ever downloaded one of these reports from any of these research companies' websites, and it kind of says that you have to enter your email ID and phone number and then verify your email ID, and then you'll get that. So come to think of it, what's happening, you had this need, right? You wanted to have some data from one of these research companies, and you went on Google, you searched for this particular piece, and there comes this link which takes you to the website, and there's a small form. You fill the form. This is the action that the company wants you to do. That's the company wants you to take on. When you have verified that email ID, it's written in a font for somewhere on like 30th page of that company's TNC, that now this company can actually reach out to you. But we kind of always overlook that because we need that report at this point in time. And that's the reward that you want. So you verify your email ID and yet you get the report. And with this one small hack for these reports, what's happening is that instead of spending money on getting you as one of the paid lead generated, now it's a complete free lead gen for this company, wherein you have actually entered your own email address and your phone number. You have verified your email address, and now you are one customer which the company can actually reach out to. So it's a classic way for a lot of companies to generate good quality leads for themselves. That's one example of gamification in B2B scenario. Look at what Glassdoor has done. Look at what G2 has done. G2 is this one app, one place wherein you can actually compare softwares. It's just a marketplace for softwares, and you can compare their ratings, just like you can compare ratings of hotels on TripAdvisor. So you can actually go there, you search for what G2.com is the site, you search for what kind of a software you want, what is the star rating, if it's 4.3 of 3.8 out of 5, what is the entry level price, how many number of people have actually given a rating to that particular software or not. And you can even get a quote and you can compare a few of these quotes. So that's another way of, you know, crowdsourcing information, and that getting that kind of a rating for a software gives you so much more trust in getting that one particular piece of software, so that you don't go from software A to software B. Like, for example, if you were to really talk about photo editing tools, and now you go on App Store. Now, when you're on the App Store, you want to really, you just say photo editing tools for iPhone. Now, you will get hundreds of these. Now, which one do you actually download? You know it from your own experience, right? You look at how many number of times it has been downloaded, how many number of people have reviewed it, what is the current rating, blah, blah, blah. These are all but gamification methodologies being deployed in a B2B scenario.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you so much for explaining that, because the only examples of gamification that I know as a marketer, you know, we usually see it in the B2C and online retail sector. For example, the Nike plus Fuel Band combo that was popular in
the days. Right, the direct sense, yeah.
Yeah, and come to think of it, the collect diyas and lanterns that Google did during Diwali,
yeah.
I think that's a classic example of how they used gamification to not only just grow, but make a campaign viral in a short span of time. So when you explain it that way about the lead generation form on the website and all that, I think that's a classic example of how B2B companies can also leverage a gamification to create enriching experience. So thank you so much for, yeah.
There are so many ways in which B2B is done, right? I mean, when you're putting in a reference in your pitch deck, for example, right? If let's say Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation have actually endorsed your product, you would go on social media and all over the world saying that, hey, we've been endorsed by this company. We have this one magic quadrant. And if you are represented in any of the four quadrants on the magic quadrant, that's a big deal.
By the way, you know, since you spoke about this, you know, it would be great if you can also share a little bit of your perspective on, you know, how do you see gamification implemented more in B2B scenario? I'm asking this because more and more of our audience are more B2B focused. And aspects of B2B marketing can you gamify? And if you can give us some examples from your personal experience, that'd be fantastic.
Sure, yeah. I'm glad you asked that question. The reason why B2B is fairly more complex than what B2C is, because the decision-making itself and the whole sales process in a B2B, the engagement process itself, be it an onboarding process, discovery process, or a scaffolding and in-game, this could be very, very different from what a B2C typically looks like. I'll give you an example. When I was leading this whole product for Yatra, for example, the way you would want to position and the way you would want to think is that it's a corporate travel platform. The users essentially are the ones who are traveling, are the users of that one organization. More often than not, the admin guys who buy this particular tool for you are the ones who use this product the least. And it's either they would typically have a travel desk in the organization who would go and make the bookings on your behalf. Or in case if the platform is fairly more evolved, you would have the employees do the bookings themselves. And then there is this whole approval process, which is a different ballgame altogether. So now when you're actually selling this tool, right, you would want to show that this tool is definitely better than what the other products in the market are. And that goes without saying, right? You would go and you would want to buy a significantly better product. But how do you actually ensure that the product is better when the other person has not used it? That's only by means of references, cross points, by means of star ratings, by means of NPS scores. And that's essentially what leads to the confidence in the product. If you don't have any cross-reference points, or any recommendations from, let's say McKinsey recommends your product to PwC. And then you say that, hey, by the way, we are doing it for McKinsey. We understand what consulting is all about. We understand how these consultants travel and their travel needs. We can cater to your business as well. And they would typically use the same pitch for KPMG, for Accenture, Deloitte as well, right? So it just makes it so much more easier when you have the social referencing or your social relatedness as one of the core drives here. So when you're going to PwC and you say that, you definitely threw a name, right? You threw a name that would basically resonate trust for the brand. So if McKinsey is already on board, great, McKinsey comes on board and then you start selling in the name of McKinsey. It's much easier for them to do. Now, the problem is, let's say if they've signed up for the platform, even then the employees will not use it for some reason or the other. Now, how do you actually get the employees to use the platform? You can actually introduce some bit of cashbacks, some bit of some rewards or incentives for these users so that they can actually come on the platform and start to use it. Now, a lot of times what people go wrong is at this step. They don't understand the need of the user exactly, and they design an incentive program which may not work for them at all. Like a lounge access or a free meal or a free glass of beer may work very well for a junior staff. But if you want to give the same kind of an incentive to a director or a CEO or a CXO level, perhaps that won't work at all. So you need to really think on who the audience is and for what kind of an audience are you really designing the reward for. If you get that right, if you get that whole persona mapping right to the rewards, the program will fly off.
So there's something that's really interesting since you mentioned the entire buying cycle. I thought I'll ask this. So in a typical enterprise software company, you would see that the set of people who are using the product are different, and then the people who are investing on the product, that is the sponsoring team, is different. So often there is always going to be a problem of adoption of a particular product. And do you see these leaderboards and all those aspects also part of gamification? Is that to improve the adoption of the product? Or
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we introduced this one feature in our platform wherein the leadership could actually see who's spending the most. As simple as that. And purely because the leadership is more focused. When we sell it to the leadership, the first pitch was that, hey, we are cheaper than platform ABC, right? And we'll help you save X million dollars on travel for next 5 years. And because they don't get those kind of metrics and those, they don't get visibility into those kind of numbers because there's no dashboard available, the whole trust kind of, you know, goes through the roof. Now, when we actually made these reports live in real time for and only accessible to the leadership, the whole trust in the organization itself was manifold. So now they started to ask us, okay, tell me who's spending the most. Tell me which sectors are they spending on the most. Tell me which airlines are they spending the most. And there could be different connotations. Like if we know which sector they are spending, Delhi, Bombay is more often than not the heaviest spend sector. Now, if Delhi, Bombay is being done, but instead of Indigo or Go Air, these guys are mostly flying, back in the days there was Jet Airways and then Air India and SpiceJet, and then came Vistara also. So depending on which airline is doing the most, that could be because of the preferred time slot or whatever, these guys can then go back to Vistara and get better deals. And that is one way of influencing decision making in B2B setup. If you know what exactly is your platform doing and what problem is the platform solving, and if you actually see results happening, the best way is to give visibility and leaderboards and giving badges to people. If it's a forum, for example, GitHub is a classic example. You have Quora is another example wherein a lot of these community people are given these badges. And if you give a badge to people, especially in a corporate, for example, in terms of travel, for somebody who's saved the maximum dollars for a company and then 10% of the saving comes back to the employee. I mean, it's a win-win for both, right? Instead of taking a flight at 10 a.m., this guy is now flying at 6 a.m. because he's able to save $3,000. And eventually, 10% of this 3,000, whatever that amount, be it rupees or dollars, that is coming back to you as your own earning. And that whole thing kind of, you know, triggers a lot of uptake and trust and reliability into the platform. And you would see more and more people actually booking for flights at times which is often earlier not preferred to them, because now they're able to save more and actually earn more in that same cycle. So just giving that kind of visibility tied into the right kind of a nudge into the program will work best. Mostly people don't get the complete program thought through. They would think of either the visibility, or they think of only savings, or they think of only giving a leaderboard. And just one element in one aspect would not really do it, unless and until you don't look at the whole piece. You have the trigger, action, reward, and investment, and then it goes back into the internal trigger. So you have to complete the loop. If you don't complete the loop, then the end game comes very, very fast.
You just talk about getting a buy-in from the leadership to apply gamification across these customer-facing channels, which reminds me of another follow-up question to add to that is, who owns that? Who owns the whole spectrum of gamifying a customer experience? Because it sounds like, it definitely sounds like an integral part of the growth pillar. But it also sounds like there's high product dependency on it. So what would be the best arrangement for companies that would want to gamify the customer experience?
Interesting question there again. Thanks for asking that. I'm kind of a little clueless on this because I haven't really spoken to a lot of people, especially in the B2B realm, for various reasons. And this is still evolving as we speak. A lot of times, anything to do with growth is either a sales function or a marketing function. Loyalty, again, kind of comes into customer delight, but then that customer delight, again, ties into marketing. So different companies have different ways to look at it. When you're talking about pure growth per se, then more often than not, when leading the program, there is somebody from sales who would typically lead that. When you're talking about a steady state program, wherein the growth phase is already done and you're now only looking at delivering customer delight or targeting the repeat, then it kind of, you know, ties into the marketing. But essentially, there has to be a separate team. I know there was a team at Make My Trip back then who would look into customer delight as a core function right through when you're doing the search, to when you're talking to the customer agent, customer care agents, you know, dropping in your leads, flying out or doing your holidays and coming back. So this team was kind of responsible at fine-tuning each aspect of your journey. Ideally, there should be one, but then a lot of times people, especially in B2B setups, they don't really look at that for various reasons, because this one could be an extra overhead, and he may not have aspects of B2B selling, for example, or B2B engagements or B2B commercials, things like that. Ideally, there has to be this one champion who kind of knows it through and through, knows exactly how business is done, how do you, you know, track the leads, how do you get more revenue, how do you get a repeat customer, what's in it for him, what are the pain points that you're really trying to solve in a B2B realm. Things like that. Like I kind of remember Cisco LED and Philips, they kind of came up with this when they launched these LED lights. They came up with a 5-year warranty or 3-year warranty, like insane warranties at that point in time. And this whole warranty was kind of extended for the corporates who were doing bulk deals with these companies. I mean, that's just such a classic example of introducing gamification, right? You're saying that the product is so awesome, you won't need to replace your bulb for 3 years. Two, you are actually helping them save dollars on the cost of electricity.
And three, you're actually saying that, hey, even if it kind of, you know, gets screwed up, we're going to help you replace the damn thing. I mean, which corporate would not want to buy that kind of a pitch and a product?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It sounds like companies might be winging it, because gamification to me, at least from a B2B perspective, sounds like a still emerging concept for a lot of businesses, especially in India. So would it be fair if we say that a lot of companies are still maturing when it comes to applying gamification in the customer experiences?
Oh, yes, absolutely. For that matter, in fact, B2C itself is trying to figure out what gamification is all about. A lot of times, people introduce games as a part of the whole customer journey, and they think that's gamification. I mean, that's not gamification. For whatever reason, you may want to introduce a game in the customer app and say that we've gamified the experience. That's not, I'm sorry. Gamification is a very, very different scheme of things and delivering awesomeness to the customer than just engaging the customer on a different set of games. I mean, like Zomato introduced videos on the app. Now, they may have a strategy to have more views and loyalty and everything. In some discussions, I've heard a few people saying that that's gamification. Now, that's not gamification, that's product diversification. That's a different product altogether. If you were to really introduce gamification, you would probably want to do it the way Dineout did. Third order on the app, you would get a bumper cashback. And then probably fifth order, you get some glass of wine free and things like that. I mean, that's essentially, so you have a core product, and this is an extension of product which kind of gives you a delight to the customer, is what comes as an incentive. That's what gamification is all about, introducing game elements and game mechanics and non-game-like scenarios. But if you just introduce game itself in the journey, then it's not even the right definition for that matter. So what you're saying is absolutely right. In B2B, people are still trying to wrap their heads around what parts do they want to gamify. Can they actually gamify that or not? Like insurance is one place wherein people are trying to gamification a lot. Could manufacturing be gamified? I'm not sure. I haven't really put my thoughts around it. Would luxury buying be gamified? Can that be gamifying? Yes, I think it can definitely be gamified. Can B2B electric trash recycling company be gamified? Yes, it can be gamified. Absolutely. There is just so many delight points that you can actually do that. Can a corporate catering service be gamified? Absolutely. Hell yes. Why not? I mean, you know, and in my experience with gamification, what we realize is that humans typically get motivated by five things. You have money and sex as the top two drivers. And then you have food, films, and phones in that order. You give them free food, you give them free entertainment, you give them free gadgets, electronic, etc. People are ready to do anything that you want. And it's kind of true in B2B scenario as well. People would typically do under the table negotiations as well. That's nothing but what money, right? You give extra money for somebody, you just bribe him out. And that's what the driver is. I mean, good, bad, ugly, that's a different debate altogether. Would it work without it? Would it not work without it? Different debate altogether. But money works. That's kind of, you know, given. And with that premise, anything wherein you are giving some money, somebody some extra money, be it B2B or B2C, feel free that action would be there because the reward is just so sweet.
So interesting, Sumit. So since you spoke about this, would you rather also say that there are some neuromarketing elements that actually goes into gamification? Coming to think of it, we are talking about triggers. We are talking about things that actually make people do certain things, take some action. So how much do you think there is neuroscience into this?
100%, without which you can't really go from what a declared preference to a revealed preference is. And as a product manager, right, you would always be looking to understand what is that real problem that you're trying to solve. So if we are really trying to solve the problem for, let's say, finance as one of the topics, or let's say HRM, a solution, and you're talking about HR reporting and a couple of other things. Just by introducing that, how many steps away you are from completing a form is a sense of gamification. Now, that could be B2B, that could be B2C, both ways, right? But just by making that whole platform so much more intuitive and exciting, you would make the platform so much more better. And eventually, when you're trying to sell this HRMS tool to the HR head of a company, the way you would want to pitch it is that, hey, you need lesser number of clicks to get a report out. That's nothing but a gamification tactic, right? And you look at the pitch, what Amazon Business says, right? They would have a list of promises that that they would essentially, you know, give to the sellers. And that list of promises have been thoroughly researched. They must have spoken to a zillions of these sellers to come down to that list of problem statements, saying, hey, this is the problem statement that these sellers essentially, you know, face when they're selling on a platform. And as Amazon Business, we are exactly there to help you solve that problem. And unless you really don't have that right, you will not get those triggers. This is another very interesting piece, which wherein, especially thanks to COVID-19, you would see a lot of times this is happening. A lot of people are actually giving away their salaries, you know, one day salary, one week salary, as CSR activities, right? On one side, we are saying that, you know, money is the biggest driver to do an action. Now, here we are saying that people are actually ready to give away money. Come to think of it, if money was a factor of delight, then by giving money, the sense of delight that they would get for contributing to something so massive as supporting the doctors and the health heroes for a fraternity, that whole delight is so much more, which is so much, the quantum of delight would be so much more higher when they're giving away money versus when you're just donating some food.
Right. And also, in a way, when you you could also say that it's in a way virtue signaling. And when you allow people to do that and make them look good in front of others, then that's quite a modification.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what social reputation and social relatedness is all about. That's one of the 8 core drivers that Yukai Chao speaks in his Octalysis framework.
Right. And interesting that, you spoke about the COVID times that we live in. And given that you have spent a good amount of time with companies like Make My Trip and Yatra, so how would you look at the current situation? You know, when you look at the current situation and the way travel industry and, everything to do with entertainment and outside is taking a hit, what are the opportunities that these kind of companies can have or do have at this moment to adapt to the new normal? And what are the things that they can gamify or what are the things that they can change so that they still stay relevant to their customers?
I haven't seen much of product diversification happening at Make My Trip or Yatra, for example. They haven't done much. I did come across with one stay indoor kind of a campaign by Ixigo. Stay safe and don't travel. Otherwise, Ixigo being a travel company. I mean, I come to think of it, just such a brilliant, responsible marketing by Ixigo to tell their customers to stay safe, travel later, or don't travel. But from a product standpoint, these companies perhaps could have pivoted the whole thing for virtual tours of the places that they wanted to travel. And if I knew that one of my customers is actually traveling to Barcelona, these guys actually have so much video content available in their libraries that they can actually just, set up some live walkthroughs of some park or some museum or some other landmark that these guys really want to do. That would be just so amazing to keep the positioning of these companies so much more relevant. I know that there are a lot of these travel bloggers, and I've been following a few guys based out of New York, that these guys are actually doing virtual, Instagram live, and they're actually giving virtual walkthroughs into their earlier programs. And they're taking the customers through and they're actually having a commentary on it. If you look on left and if you look on right, you see this, you see that. And there is this whole new coffee shop, blah, blah, blah. When we open up, we'll definitely take you there. They are engaging with the customer. So again, the problem statement here is that people are so bogged down, they're afraid to travel. Travel industry is probably one of those industries which is, you know, max hit by the COVID-19 situation. The essential services will be up. The transport perhaps would be up. The, all other industries perhaps would be up. But fringe spending on travel for luxury is something which is really going to take a lot of time, because a lot of people are actually leaving their jobs. They've been asked to leave. Businesses are shutting down. The luxury element of spending is definitely one big chunk which is not really going to see a comeback, and at least for next about 6 months is what my hunch is. I could be wrong. I would want to be proven wrong, because I would love to travel myself, and I would love to see people traveling and sharing some happy moments myself. But as what industry gurus are saying is that travel is badly, badly hit. Now, that said, you also spoke about entertainment, right? I think entertainment is one area which has gone through the roof right now in a good way. Netflix kind of saw a huge surge in their traffic. So did Amazon Prime, I think, if I remember correctly. It's Netflix who have turned off the HD, HD signal all across India now. They're only transmitting on SD right now.
Right. It's actually pretty much with almost every entertainment tool now. Even Prime is doing that, and Jio is doing that.
Yes, I mean, the traffic is going, it's such a massive surge happening at this point in time that people are hooked on to their devices and just consuming entertainment. This, we would definitely see some normalization happening there once the market opens up. But travel is something which will have to wait for a really long time to come back. And also, there's another side to it when people are saying that once it comes back, the cost of travel is definitely going to be much higher than what we've been seeing. It could be 1.5 to 3x more than what we've been paying in the past. So travel definitely would become a lot more costlier.
That sounds like a bad news for all of us.
I swear, man. I mean, likewise.
Yeah. Well, this has been a very deep, meaty conversation, Sumit. We definitely learned a lot about gamification and, being B2B driven sales and marketing folks. It's a new concept for me and Yag, and definitely for the audience of the ABM Conversation podcast. So we want to thank you so much for taking out the time to, come to our show and explain us all the aspects of gamification so clearly. Thank you so much, and we wish you all the best. Stay safe and take care.
Thank you so much for having me, guys. Such a pleasure. Thanks.
And one last thing, Sumit, like if our audience needs to find you and connect with you, like what's the best place for them to connect with you?
My number, I believe, is on Google now. I'm there on LinkedIn. I'm there on Instagram as Travelchers, wherein I share my travel and food blog and my music blog. So yeah, I mean, feel free. My social handles available. You can make them public. I'm more than happy to have discussions with your folks. If somebody would want to engage me for a discussion or a project, they need some help, something, I'm always there to help. The more the merrier. Always up for challenges, exciting problems, and bring them on.
All right. So thank you so much. I'm sure our people will definitely get in touch with you. We'll also share your social profiles in our show notes. And once again, as Manish said, we are extremely happy and delighted that we learned a lot in this session. And thank you once again for spending time with us.
Thank you so much. I'm hoping I was of help. Thanks.
Definitely. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.